This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 548, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 548. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
Hello. Delay.
It was a dramatic pause, but I see that sometimes on Skype it feels like there's a technical issue, so I apologize for that.
Yeah, come on, man. So I am broadcasting from the happiest place on Earth on the West Coast, and you are broadcasting from your basement, and Connor is still MIA.
The basement's a pretty happy place. There's bikes down here, there's guitars, there's no children. They're not allowed down here.
All right. Well, we are the gentleman from iFanboy, and that's a place where we like comic books, and every week we read a stack.
I want to refer to each other like we're in Congress. The chair recognizes the gentleman from Northport.
One of us picks our favorite book, and we call that the pick of the week. Then we'll come here and we'll talk about that book, the other books. We'll talk about some other fun stuff that's going on in the world of comics. Maybe read some of your emails. We're just going to have a good time. That's the point. But we want you to have a good time. So quick warning, we're going to talk about what happened in the comic books. So there might be spoilers, so be careful. It's a review show, so we need to talk about them. But that said, be warned. Josh, you had the pick. Go for it.
Thank you to the esteemed gentleman from Northport. I'd like to thank everyone listening. And before I get to my comments, I want to have a moment of silence. I'm done. Pick of the week is All-Star Batman number one from the team of Scott Snyder, John Romita Jr., Danny Meekie, with a backup by Declan Shalvey and Jordy White.
Great Declan Shalvey.
It's all great at this point. Yeah. And if he gets Jordy coloring.
Did you say Jordy White?
I may have.
Did you just make a hybrid of Jordy Belair and Dean White and one Uber Voltron colorist?
I was looking at the cover. So yeah, I totally did that, but unintentionally. My mind was like, get through it. Yeah. So what I liked here, I guess first of all, what I liked was the art. It was really nice to see John Romita Jr. on something that really worked for him, because what I find is that sometimes it doesn't. The other day I was remembering, when he did Thor, and I thought that was awesome. You remember when he did Thor?
Which time?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But like, it was, that literally occurred to me. I was like, oh, that was, I like Thor, like, and I like Thor now just fine, but I really, that was great. And so I've seen him on stuff that I liked a lot, since then. And he's never done Batman, so this is actually kind of a big deal. And so I was really excited to read through it. And then you get to the backup, you know, with Declan Shalvey doing that. And I was like, oh, this is – it looked – basically, the point being, it looked different and it felt different from all of the Batman books that we have been getting for quite some time, even though Scott Snyder is also writing it, I feel like he made an effort to vary his structure, his storytelling style, to sort of show us a different way of doing things, such to the extent that, like, I wasn't entirely sure. I guess it is in continuity, but I was like, I don't even know if this is the same Batman. I wasn't sure if we were looking at Bruce Wayne in the Batman costume.
Well, you could tell we are because he's got the awful new costume.
Well, at this point, I have what veteran comic book readers will call costume blindness.
Yeah.
Which is a thing I've had to develop so that I can get through books.
Spider-Man helped you with that, didn't he?
Does he have a new costume?
Well, the glowing blue spider.
I'm sorry, I don't know anything about that.
Nice.
Oh, choke it down. But basically, you are, page one, you're off running. You know, there's a Batman or his crashes through, or actually it doesn't happen right away, but some villains crash through a diner window and they're going after Batman. And it's just like we're off and running and we don't really know what's going on, but in the good way. Not right. In the way I read a book last week, but this happened, but this one seemed to happen before it. So what happened? Not like that.
Right. Yeah, no, this one, Snyder definitely, you know, played with time jumps to tell the story across. You know, like it throws you into a dramatic situation. You don't really know what's going on. And then you see like 20 minutes ago, 2 hours ago, yeah. You know, like it's kind of, you know, filling 2 weeks ago, filling you in on what's been going on in a really kind of nefarious, fucked up situation that Two-Face has created.
Yeah. And I liked that. It's like clearly extremely well planned, you know, in the way that it's all been put together. And I like Two-Face. Two-Face is fun. Two-Face is almost more fun to me than Joker because, A, he doesn't get overused too much, and, B, there's that really nice dichotomy between friend and foe. Like, Batman, he's the friend. Like, if your friend was Batman, you'd be like, you need to stop hanging out with that guy. And he's like, I know. But,
well, I mean, and we almost have that with a little betrayal at the end of the issue.
Yeah, but he should know that's coming by now. It's like Batman's fault. So like the only time Batman makes bad decisions is when it comes to like certain things, and he always makes bad decisions when it comes to Two-Face. So I liked that. I liked the sort of for some reason there were
we're not explaining what the situation was. So what happens is that Two-Face has created this whole network of information gathering, criminal activities, you know, gathering, you know, kind of what everybody's been up to so that he can use that against them. And in a major motivation, he decides to reach out to the entire city of Gotham and say, all right, I've got shit on everyone and it's all going to go public unless you kill Batman for me. And so then basically what you have is you have a world where everybody's gunning for Batman and not everyone is immune even. And also there's also a financial reward. Basically says, you know, not only will I not release all the information, but I will share with you all the money I've, you know, like gotten, whatever. And so you have the situation where all, you know, hired mercenaries and folks like that are gunning for Batman. And then even the average Joes in the diner he crashed into decide they want a piece of the action. And even Alfred is not immune to it. So when I turned that page, I was like, oh, Alfred, you too.
Well, I think that's how you're supposed to feel.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I know I'm being manipulated, but come on.
And I was just like, well, at least he's got his hand. Oh, not now this.
Yeah, I know.
Now this.
Well, just so you know, the shot of Alfred, you don't see his hand, so we don't know if he has the hand or not, but yes.
I'm just going to assume that they were like, all right, let's just forget the hand thing. It's fine. But basically, you know, like it was, I had fun reading it, and I don't know that I look forward to Batman all that much. These days, not because it's been bad, it just, you know, I feel like we were in one really long story for a while, and now, like, they're out in daylight in the middle of a cornfield or whatever, so just those little things and bringing Romita on, it was fun, it was, and at the end of it.
It's interesting because I was surprised you picked this because, you know, we have had a lot of Batman over the past, you know, 5 years of Snyder and Capullo doing that great run. And though that great run was comprised of, like you said, like all these big stories that took a long time and that sort of thing. And so now that that's over, a part of me was like, all right, Snyder, go do something. Like, I'd rather go do something else than Batman. But it's interesting to see this All-Star Batman book is a way for him to kind of have his cake and eat it too and still have fun with the characters and tell these kind of stories. But like you said, like there, it's already it felt different than the stuff he did with Capullo, just the fact that it was out in broad daylight. And it was, you know, like – and it, you know, like I don't get the sense that this is going to be the – you know, massive, you know, jaw-clenching, ongoing 8-month storyline.
And there's not the hidden sort of like, and then the Court of Owls was actually doing the whole thing. It's just Batman versus Two-Face.
Yeah, classic.
Yeah, yeah. So. But, I mean, this is, I think Snyder's like, he's like Bendis with Spider-Man. He's just going to keep going. That's his guy.
Right. Oh. But, yeah, exactly, whether we like it or not. And then of course, you know, there's the awesome backup by Mr. Declan Shalvey.
Yeah, yeah. I don't understand all these Batman and Robin people who are going around.
I had no idea who this person in yellow is. I mean, I do, but I don't.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it. But he's kind of an interesting character and a look, and he's got his thing going on. He's not Robin. He doesn't want to be Robin. He's made it very clear. He does not want to be sidekick.
I can't help, and this is my own personal bias or whatever, but both in the Romita story and in the Shalvey story, there's numerous times where Batman says, no, he's not Robin, I'm trying a different way. Mm-hmm. And I can't help but to think of Wet Hot American Summer.
I'm trying to
with Chris Malone. When Chris Maloney is training Michael Showalter, it's like you have to use a different way. And then it goes into the montage.
Show me the fever, hotter and hot. Sorry.
So every time he says that, I hear that music. So thank you for
that. That's fine. That's good. I don't see that.
I thought the little thing about the colors was really interesting in the Shalvey backup.
Yeah,
where basically Batman is plotting a mood board of colors and relating to the different team members and the colors that they represent. You know, where Dick Lean's blue, Damian green, Barbara purple. It's like,
let me ask you this: have you ever read a comic book story that was tailored because of the colorist?
No,
this is a first. This is an historic first.
It's a very good point.
Jordy Belair's doing this. All right, watch what I got here. It's going to take place in the fucking garment district.
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
Watch this. It looked good. He could do Batman.
Yep. He can sure do Batman. So good job.
And there you have All-Star Batman number one.
Your pick of the week for this week.
Yeah. Yeah. And now, ratings.
It's time for ratings.
Ratings.
Ratings. So we didn't think there were any Rebirth books this week, but they snuck one in. And we're really getting to the end of the rope on these Rebirth books. It's like I'm waiting for I didn't think Deathstroke was going to have a Rebirth book. That's what I'm saying.
I was like, well, is this a Suicide Squad thing? No, just a Deathstroke book.
Just a Deathstroke book.
Okay.
Where they do a really good job of explaining to you who Deathstroke is.
Yep.
Like literally in one page where another guy's telling him, listen, you're Deathstroke. Lays it all out there. So if you've never read a Deathstroke book, this will tell you what you need to know. And then again, this is one of those Rebirth books that doesn't really reset. Well, I don't know what was going on with Deathstroke before this, but it doesn't really reset things. It just kind of kicks off whatever the story is going to be.
Yeah.
It's like a prologue.
It was Christopher Priest and Carlos. Oh, that's the name I'm not good at. That's a Filipino name, I believe.
Pagalayan.
Pretty good looking, if not a little house, like the good end of the house style. Let's call it that.
Yes, I'll go with that.
It was, I think if I had a compliment for it, it would be that it was raw. I was like, oh, that's pretty hardcore. It was sort of at the vertigo end of a DC comic book, I think, because it's a bad guy and he's kind of morally ambiguous, or if that's even a nicer way to put it, I think, because he's an asshole to his kids, historically, as we see in this book, but he kind of wants to do a good thing. There's a bit in here where basically, I'm not entirely sure the story, but there seems to be an African warlord dictator type who he's chatting with at the beginning, but Deathstroke has been sent there to kill somebody who the dictator is supposed to be protecting. So they do a little backroom deal, and then he finds out that it's going wrong. And he says, give me all the money in your pockets to these two guys who thought that he would have to kill him. He goes, there, now you've hired me. And I was like, well, that was nice of him. Then there's a reveal that he runs into his friend who's named after Gum, who's in a cave, watching VHS tapes of him, of Deathstroke and his children.
Weird.
I fell apart on me there. I don't know if you could tell that, but that's the part where I was like, I don't know what that's about.
Yeah, this was, I mean, this was all right. I mean, it was just, it felt like it was setting up a story and Deathstroke with this dictator and there's some tie to the past and Deathstroke's children. And if you're a Deathstroke fan, it seems like you're in for a good ride. So
I agree with that.
Yeah. So ratings. What would you rate this?
2.5.
All right, I'd be a little more generous. I'd give it a 3, just a solid 3, in that it was completely unoffensive, but also not inspiring or awful, you know? So,
yeah, like 2.5 it was professional. It did the job. I mean, I'd maybe go 2.75, but 3 is a little more towards I like it enough that I care.
I did not like it.
I know, but I don't care. So, right. I don't want to read, like, that's the next part. I don't want to read the next part.
Yeah, well, that was my question. Are you going to stick with it?
No, so, I don't have any interest in doing that.
Yeah, I'm not going to stick with it either. So.
But it would have had to be an amazing. Like, it would have had to be like Warren Ellis and Frank Quitely.
What if it was like Dave Gibbons and Kurt Busiek?
I don't know. I don't know if that's enough.
Wow.
I mean, that'd have to be really good.
That's another. Wait. Where's Jimmy the intern? We should take this. We should note this for when Connor comes back. That's a good bit to do. What would it take to get you to read blank comic?
Well, let me ask you this: is Dave Gibbons a draw? Is 2016 Dave Gibbons a draw to a superhero book?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I don't think so.
Yeah,
he did Green Lantern for a while, and we weren't all like, "Yay!"
That's true.
Dave Gibbons is a draw in that. That's another Green Lantern book, and he wrote it, too. I like it.
Oh, well.
Great guy. Done great work, but, you know.
Right. But anyway, I think that's an interesting concept. But anyway, okay. So there are your rebirth ratings.
Ratings.
So when does this end? It's got to be over.
I wrote to you, and I was like, there's no rebirth books, right? You know, there is. There's Deathstroke. And I was like, come on. Come on, Deathstroke.
Who is left?
Don't ask that question.
I don't know obscure DC characters. If it was Marvel, I could do that. But, yeah, but, like, anyway, so. All right, well, moving on. Is Wonder Woman really up to issue 10?
That's a typo. It's just number 4. But, very seriously, it's a problem. This week, I was like, I need to drop some of these books.
Yeah.
Like, I have to raise the level of, if it's a 3.5, that might not, only 4 is an up. So, but the thing that's happening with this one, which is different than all the other ones, is that there's 2 storylines, and it's every other week. Which is different, which is that's an odd tack. I feel like that's something they did in the 50s.
Right.
I like this end of the storyline better.
Right.
Than the other one.
Okay, but why?
It really is just another origin retelling, and I know that you get sick of those, but I haven't read one in a while or something, but I don't find myself terribly familiar with the background of Wonder Woman, especially since they just rewrote it from whatever it was before. And so watching them play with sort of the tonality of how they're explaining that to today's audience, I think, and how they're treating the sort of Themyscira. I can't say that word. Themyscira.
Themyscira. Sure. Okay. Themyscira. Yeah.
You know, how that's being treated is kind of interesting. And I don't know. Maybe it might just be the Nicola Scott art I like more.
Yeah.
She's great.
So I did not read this because I can't keep up.
Uh-huh.
And also I'm not really interested in Wonder Woman, but from what I read on the Twitter, there's a questionable moment, isn't there?
Is there?
I believe so. Wasn't it called into question whether the line was it in Wonder Woman or it was in Justice League?
No, I believe there was. Yeah. Okay.
You know where I'm going?
She goes to protect some people.
Yes.
And says,
oh, wait, I'm sorry. This is an Action Comics 961.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's what it was.
But it is Wonder Woman. So let's do it now.
That's fine. I'm fine with that. Yeah. So basically, she goes to protect Clark and his family from Doomsday. And she says, don't worry, I have this.
Interesting.
I have this.
A very similar to I got this,
mm-hmm.
which by the way, had I known the Olympics were coming up, I would not have run as far with the I got this joke as we have.
Well, we can't turn back now.
I know we can't. But anyway, so does I have this? Is that okay?
I'm gonna rule a negative. It is not the same.
Oh, wow.
No, it's not the same as I got this.
Okay, cool. All
because right. It is not, because A, I got this. It smacks of a colloquialism, a slang, like the wording doesn't. I have this is grammatically correct.
Yep.
But it's also, it's not the cliche.
Right.
It's because it's so grammatically correct that you're. It's close. It's the same. It's like them trying to say it without going, well, what if we don't do that? What if we just say it like this? There are instances when it's appropriate, and like literally, I think the reason that we see it in comics so much is that comics are built around that moment, moment when the hero gathers up his courage and breathes in deep, and is like, we're on top of this, we've got this,
right? But unfortunately, it's just too much. They've got
well
too
now
far.
You see it as soon as you see it all the time, you have to think of another way to do it.
That's why. That's the challenge. Yeah. So all right. Well, I'm sorry. We deviated to Action Comics, Wonder Woman. So Wonder Woman, 10 issues in. You're liking this origin, basically. And
yeah, I don't know why, but it makes me. I have to read all of them, but I don't want to read all. But I don't really want to read every other one. I don't know. I might have to not.
See what I was gonna say is that can you read every other one and still get away with it, or are they gonna tie together at some point? That's what I'd be worried about.
They must tie together at some point. But also, I trust my ability to be able to follow it at that point.
Right. Yeah. I kind of been reading comics for a while. I know.
Yeah. It's not Sartre. It's gonna be fine. I like Greg Rucka, but you know, that's not what he's being hired for. But this is one of those bubble books. It's right. Like it's really pretty good, but there's like every other week or more than that, it's getting to be a lot.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Space George Lucas.
Space George Lucas, there you go.
Space George Lucas over in Empress number 5. Are you still reading? You must be reading this.
I am still reading this, yes. Yeah. I want to like this more than I do.
I understand that. I understand that. I don't think I'm that far along the spectrum as you.
Okay.
Because I mean, when you combine...
Hang on, time out. What spectrum are we talking about here?
I like it. I don't love it like I want to, but I'm not quite at the point of being disappointed.
Not disappointed, but I want to like it more. Like, I love the idea. Well, first, I love me Stuart Immonen, and I do love me some Mark Miller, and I love the idea of a sweeping space opera. But there's something about this that is just off a beat for some reason, I can't put my finger on it. I don't know if it's just the issues are too short or there's too much alien stuff or whatever, but it just, like, I feel like I'm like, oh, I want to love this, and I don't know why.
Okay. I think you're right. And I think I'm not gonna start doing that. Ironically, that's not gonna happen. I think you're right. And I think I'm in a little denial about it because I really want to like it because it is Stuart Immonen doing, you know, just top flight Stuart Immonen. I think we're finding no fault with him. Am I correct?
No.
It would be impossible to. I don't think I've ever seen a Stuart Immonen book and be like, he really phoned this one in. Because he couldn't. Because I've seen books where he just uses like three lines and it's like, you still have it. I think it might, it's missing something. It's missing the pop. It's missing the next thing.
It's missing like the heart from Starlight.
Maybe.
You know, like that, like, and I get the sense that it's the, you know, the family and they're on the run and the guy's protecting them, but I haven't latched on to a character that I love. So
I don't think anything has changed with the characterization since we started. Yep. So the characters are all who they were. We haven't learned a new thing about them.
Right.
I'm really interested in the concept of the sort of dark side character, the father going after them and them being the children of that. I'm guessing that this will read a lot better in trade.
Maybe.
Because it is super fast paced. So when you get to the end of the issue, it doesn't feel like much has happened because they gave them all the room to play inside these set pieces, basically. Right. And it really is going from one place to another, which doesn't feel a whole lot different than Black Science.
Right. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I don't know. I just
all the pieces are there. It's well done. I agree with you. I think you're right.
It looks gorgeous. It's really wonderful, but it's yeah, something is a little short. So, mm-hmm. So moving on. Back when the first issue of the series came out, I was off, so I missed the show, so I didn't get a chance to talk about it. But I've been waiting for the moment that the Flintstones number two shipped. Have you read either the first or second issue of this?
I'm gonna go ahead and say I probably don't need to answer.
Holy shit! You've got to read this, dude. You have got to read this.
More.
I'm pretty sure.
Why do I need to
read this? I want to make sure, but I believe it's the same writer who wrote Prez.
Really?
Yes. I'm looking that up right now. Wow. I'm pretty sure it's the same writer. And it's turned into – the first issue I was just like, what the fuck is this? This is just like – it's a weird modernization of the Mark Russell. Same writer. Mark Russell. It's basically – I mean, if you remember the Flintstones – so it's part of the whole Hanna-Barbera relaunch.
I remember the Flintstones.
But we got some millennials who listen. They might not know. We live in a world where some kids have not seen the Flintstones, by the way, which is scary.
Fair enough.
Very scary. But
they don't know that it was on every single day.
Like numerous times.
For our whole childhood. And at that point, it was 20 years
old.
Yeah,
it was great. But so the Flintstones basically took the Honeymooners conceit, which is two couples, and the main couple being with a loud, boisterous husband, and put it into the caveman time. And they had all the modern conveniences, but it was all with a caveman twist. So they had a record player, but it was a bird that with a beak went on the record, and that's how the music played. And,
it's a living.
Yeah, exactly. So all – like whereas Wacky Races was – fucking weird and like whatever, and Scooby-Doo's got emoji and emoticons and that's right, and a hipster Shaggy. Flintstones, really all it is it's a modern updating of that concept, and it has also become a scathing commentary on our society. And this whole issue basically, a mall opens in Bedrock. And it's a new thing that the new trend is everybody's buying crap. And it's stuff you don't need, but everybody wants it. And it becomes this like Fight Club-esque discourse on like owning things.
Steve Pugh, by the
way. Yeah, yeah. It's like I'm actually going to go as far to say Flintstones is pretty great. It's
like, What a nice thing to hear.
I know. And there's a couple of weird things. Like they changed you know how Fred and Barney were in they were in the lodge with the hats.
Well, the water buffalo, right. Lodge of the Order of the White.
Right, so they've changed that to it's like a VFW hall where they're veterans of the Paleolithic Wars. So it's like a veterans club. They still wear the hats, but it's like so Fred needs more money so Wilma can buy crap at the mall. So Fred and Barney take on a gig selling vitamins door to door. And it's a pyramid scheme, and Fred gets screwed, and it's just like, and it is like, I mean, yes, it's weird, and it's caveman era, and there's a lot of kind of like eye rolling kind of references and relations to now, but it's like, I was like, damn, this is some social commentary going on here. So who knew the Flintstones actually would be pretty good. So,
and of course, sexy Wilma.
Sexy. Well, and oh, I shouldn't say it, but sexy. What's the
Sexy Betty.
No, younger.
Oh, no.
Well, they're older. The kids are older. Right. Well, what is her name?
I can't remember. There's Bam Bam, Bam and...
And, oh, what is her name? Pebbles? No. Yeah, Pebbles. That's what it is. Pebbles.
That's right.
So, no, but Pebbles and Bam Bam are like teens. It's like when they go to the mall, Pebbles goes right to the record store, and there's a guy they're selling records on slates and that sort of thing, and she's in her hair's all kind of wacky and punk kind of thing, and they're like,
all right.
And in the background, there's like Steve Pooh. There you go. There's vague like there's a offshoot of the Velvet Underground record, but instead of a banana, it's a pineapple. And I can see a Sex Pistols, and the record store clerk is wearing a pot like Devo, and it says Devonian and Devo. But yeah, so anyway, Flintstones.
Right.
There you go. So,
all right, you know what?
What's up?
You convinced.
Awesome. Yeah, check it
when out. You started this, I thought there's no way whatever you say. Now I'm kind of interested. Yeah. All right, Okay.
So, yeah, who knew? So as I'm going through the books, a lot of books came out. I'm getting kind of harsh on anything with the Civil War II title on it, and I'm going to talk about that later in the show, I think. But but I did notice this one book called The Accused, issue number one by Mark Guggenheim with art by Ramon Box and Gary Brown. And aside from sharing the title of a Jodie Foster movie from the 80s, this focuses on Daredevil as the prosecutor of Clint Barton. And so I Civil War 2-4 came out when I was off the show. You guys didn't – did you guys talk about it? I don't remember. Okay, yes. So you know that Clint Barton was acquitted of the murder of Bruce Banner.
Yeah. That's actually why I didn't read this.
Well,
it was just out of annoyance.
Here's the nice little thing that they like to do. If you're into the Civil War II storyline, you probably should read this book, because this book outlines the fact that it's the whole legal stuff. They explain why Matt Murdock is their lawyer. Remember, I called that out. Like, why is he the lawyer? They go through the whole trial, and basically Murdock discovers it's a conspiracy to ensure the fact that Barton is found guilty, right? And he talks to the defense attorney, and he figures out like what's going on. And he breaks into the office, the government office of the woman who hired him for it. And as Daredevil, he listens to a conversation. And basically, this is all the motivation for them to bring back the Superhero Registration Act. So while Civil War II is not about superhero registration, guess what? It is. And what's great is that he's listening to the conversation, and he says, you know, there's generals and bureaucrats, and says they're getting ready to pass SRA-2, and the general says SRA-2, and they said short for Superhuman Registration Act 2, and then the general goes, I just thought they could have come up with a more imaginative name. Like, it's like in the comic, like this is okay. So if you're deep into this,
that's funny, because they're talking about Civil
exactly.
War
exactly. Yes, that's what I mean.
That's
so, but anyway, I thought that was a pretty big piece of the Civil War puzzle, and who knows how big, whether it goes anywhere. But this could end up being a impactful book from the greater storyline. Other than that, it was fine. It was, you know. So I thought that was interesting.
All right.
Yep. There you go.
Yeah, you said you're going to bring it up later. So let's talk a little bit about support.
All right.
We need some support.
We all need some support sometimes.
We all need someone to lean on. iFanboy.com/support is where you can go for that, and there you're going to find a link to Amazon.com. And if you click through on that link, actually, it's actually a picture. Actually, that's iFanboy.com/Amazon, which also works.
Yep.
You click on that, and it'll send you over to Amazon. You'll see in the little code, there's a little bit up there in the URL that says you're there through us. And when that happens, that whatever you put in your cart and whatever you buy from there, we get a cut of that. And it doesn't cost you anything. It doesn't cost anything extra. And it's actually a huge part of how we support the show. So keep doing that. And if you haven't started doing that, do that more. I know there are other shows who also have this kind of thing. Don't use their links, though. Use our link is my message. I'm saying put us ahead of them because we're better.
Well, or you like us.
if you like us more, then we're better. I guess you could also use a needs-based system. Like, who needs it? We need it, and we're better. So you should use our Amazon link. And I haven't ordered anything from Amazon in about a week.
All right.
And I'm starting to get twitchy. Because the UPS truck is here. Oh, thank God the UPS's truck here. Oh, I have a thing. Because you like to get a thing, right? And then you can sell that stuff and buy some other stuff. It's a good time.
Everyone likes to get a thing. We all like stuff.
No.
There you go.
No one doesn't like to get stuff. Yeah, my God, the Flintstones is so precious.
Exactly. There it is.
You can also, of course, become a patron. And you're already starting to see the benefits of the extremely wonderful and dedicated patrons who have come to patreon.com/iFanboy. You can decide upon a level of support that you would like to contribute to this show. Basically, if you like this thing, you can pay some towards it.
Yeah.
Because that's how the entertainment economy works now, and it does all sorts of good things for us. Keeps us motivated, keeps us going, but also will bring you rewards based on that those goals getting higher and higher. We are up through over the $1,000 goal, which is the monthly hangout.
Currently, we've got 215 patrons, and we're at a little over $1,200, and so we've got $800 to go to our next goal, which will bring back the iFanboy special edition T-shirts. So
nice. Yep. So the T-shirts are coming up, but now we're gonna have details on the Hangout. We're gonna get that. Summer's been a busy time.
A lot of travel.
Before that, we're bringing back Booksplodes and Talksplodes. Okay. I'll let you know what that first Talksplode is gonna be.
Yeah.
At the end of the show, you're gonna have that. And I guess that's all. And it's kind of amazing. It's been wonderful to watch that. And thank you. It's a big impetus for us to make sure we're keeping up with the show and also produce more.
Yeah, it helps everything keep running smoothly and make sure Josh shows up every week. So there you go.
Totally. Because I mean, at the end of the day,
right? Let's be honest.
It's all about that money, yo. Yeah.
All right. So moving on. Vision number 10.
Nearly pick of the week.
Nearly pick of the week, huh?
Nearly pick of the week. Really, really good. I don't know if I had anything else to say about it that we didn't say about it the last time it was pick of the week. Right. But it's just like Tom King keeps amping up what is happening. And basically at the end of the last issue, like Vision did bad things. And now we find out that the Avengers basically have them under house arrest. And they're all just like, everything is fine. Everything's going to be. It is the most simmering, like, commentary on what I see as like suburban parenthood and just sort of like being stuck in this place, and it is so cold and grim and but also really, really human at the same time. Yep. And so the end bit where he makes his move is pretty shocking. I don't know what you do with the Vision after this. I don't know why they let him do this after they introduced the Vision in the movies, but it's great. Yeah. It continues to be great, and Walta's art is great.
This is a nice little bit of inspired run that you hope to see in this land of weekly shipping and rotating creative teams and things like that. So when it all ends, this is going to be a great single volume that you can hand to somebody, which is all, you know, which is the best thing that we can hope for with these comics. So yeah,
and it's great. It actually fits though, because the Vision's always been weird. Yep. And so it's sort of continuing in that, but also giving us something new. It's very cool. Speaking of weird. Still, are you reading New Superman?
New Superman number one impressed me so much that I read number two, and I enjoyed it a lot.
This is I don't know why this exists.
Yeah,
and not in a bad way. I'm just like, really, you're doing this? Yeah. Awesome, go for it. I want to see everything that you throw everything at me right now. This Elseworlds Chinese Superman,
it's not an Elseworlds.
No, I know. It explores those same kind of themes.
Yeah, so China is building their own Justice League China, which they totally would do. And as we found out in the first issue, they recruited a young bully teenager to be the new Superman, and he trains with the Chinese Batman and Wonder Woman, and his powers get drained, and they don't know why. And turns out it's because he needs sunlight. He needs solar power. And then he proceeds to out himself on to the media.
It is fun that he's just got no control over what he says. He's completely impulse driven. There's this gag that goes on throughout it that he's got these silly glasses that he can't take off, and they zap him all the time, which is funny.
It's great. I mean,
he keeps calling Batman.
Yeah, fat. Because the Batman's a little girthy. And the thing is that it flows with energy and positivity that I know Gene can write, and it just kind of explodes. Each page explodes with that enthusiasm. Mm-hmm.
There's still a raw edge at the bottom of it, though.
Yeah.
Like we're just like, ooh, that's kind of rough.
And Jean Luen Yang and Victor Bogdanovich on art. I mean, this is like we were saying that he just needed a good artist to kind of balance the kind of approach he takes, and I think he's got it with Bogdanovich. It's just like I really like this book a lot. So
yeah. It's again, it's something interesting in that sea of things that, although you know what, other than releasing issues every 12 minutes, DC is a lot more interesting things on the table than they had previously.
Speaking of that, did you read Superwoman number one?
I did not. Well, I've never read a Superwoman book in my life.
Well, there's never. I don't think there's ever been a Superwoman book before.
Or Supergirl, any of those.
Well, because you're a misogynist. But I'm kidding. You're not a misogynist. You're an okay guy.
Neither of us are allowed to make that call.
True. Anyway, but yeah, so this is Superwoman number one, and it's written by Phil Jimenez. And drawn by him as well too, which is awesome. And talk about doing interesting stuff. This might have been one of them. This might have, if I was doing the pick of the week, if I was choosing the pick this week and Flintstones hadn't come out, this might have been my pick of the week.
Wait, so you're saying that Flintstones was your pick?
It might have. I could have made a case, I think. But this was really interesting because what it is Lois – one thing – there's one overarching thing is that I'm not a big fan of the whole Superman universe. You know, like it's never been my favorite. And it seems right now they've got a lot of people running around with the S on their chest, right? You got –
You got
new old Superman. You got Lex Luthor. You got this Chinese Superman. There's just a lot of S's going on, and this adds more S's to the mix. In that, the new 52 Lois Lane has powers now and is being Superwoman, and she's got a very almost Frank Quitely All Star Superman esque kind of costume, and she's making her presence known in Gotham, and she's blurring her face so that nobody knows that it's Lois Lane. And turns out in her corner is that she's got Lana Lang helping her out, which was really interesting. And there's a great sequence of Lana helping Lois train to use her powers, much like she did Clark in this new 52 universe. Then there's a big event on an aircraft carrier, and something goes wrong, and Lex shows up, but his suit doesn't work, and so Lois appears, but she can't do it by herself. And then bam, turns out Lana Lang has powers, but she's got electric red Superman powers. And so now there are two Superwomen. And there's this great sequence of them fighting together and doing the whole thing, and you get the flashbacks and you understand how she got the powers and all this sort of stuff. And then at the very end of the issue, Lois Lane dies. Which I did not see coming. I was like, wow, way to introduce this whole paradigm and then immediately take out one half of it. So the Superwoman on the cover of this issue is dead.
Well, now no one has to read it.
Well, no, but now the story is about Lana Lang as the Red Electric Superwoman, and it's really compelling, and I might stick with it. So,
well, all right then.
So good stuff. And then finally, did you read Scarlet Witch?
No, it's one of the ones I dropped off.
All right, well,
who drew it? Who drew it?
Joelle Jones.
She's good,
except for the fact that it's got the Civil War II tie-in. And it's just an entire issue of Scarlet Witch talking to Quicksilver, with Quicksilver telling her she's got to choose a side and her saying that she doesn't want to. That's it. And this is the case of, you know, somebody like James Robinson has been doing a great thing on Scarlet Witch with each of these one and done kind of issues. And then this crossover comes in and just jams this right into it. And, you know, sure, we get a little, you know, with No More Mutants, and we get a little all kind of, you know, that, you know, that, you know, the references to the past. But this issue just totally goes off the beat of the series up to this point. And ultimately, we get three pages of Quicksilver recapping Civil War II explaining what's going on in case you weren't reading it. And then it basically ends with Scarlet Witch.
You got to grab all those people who weren't reading Marvel proper but were stuck on Scarlet Witch.
And then
those don't exist.
Then Scarlet Witch confronts Quicksilver and tells him that he's a sociopath and he's not good for her and that she never wants to see him again. And that's how it ends. And so it's like, oh, this is a good series, beautiful art, but just don't ram the dumb crossover down the throat of a book that's going on a good – like imagine if they did this to Vision. If Vision number 10 had a Civil War II tie-in.
It's amazing that it hasn't. It felt like it was touching it, but it kind of didn't.
Yeah. So anyway, so that was Scarlet. But that said, Joelle Jones is beautiful. James Robinson writes a great comic. It's just I hate to see it have to, you know, participate really. So
okay. You know what we get to go to now?
Star Wars Corner.
Star Wars Corner.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait, before we go to Star Wars, we got to go back to Empress. Empress also had it. I got this.
Yeah. It had a deviation,
though, is where the woman asked, Ship, you got this? And somebody says, yeah, it's got it. So, anyway, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a variation.
It's a variation, yeah. So at least they're trying to do something different. All right.
This is the second to last issue of Darth Vader. Which is our favorite Star Wars? No, I don't. We're not willing to say.
No, Star Wars is my favorite.
It's a great Star Wars book, though. We've pressed this in, but it is so much more interesting than you would think it should be. At all. Although, This issue was largely composed of flashbacks and dream sequence-y hallucinations from episode 3, Revenge of the Sith.
What happens is that the silo guy has taken control of Vader's cybernetics and basically shut him down, or so he thinks. And so Vader's robotics aren't functioning, so he's just sitting there, and we get to see what's going on in Vader's head, where he replays the "you were the chosen one" end of episode 3.
It brings up a lot of bad feelings.
A lot of bad feelings. A lot.
Like, you flip it, and I see Hayden Christensen there, just like...
I will give Kieran Gillen credit for going there.
You have to. I think if you're him, you own it.
Yep.
They're saying, this is it. You go, okay, fine, we're going there. I have experience killing children, he says.
Well, this is what's interesting about this, is that, so he in Vader's mind, he's reliving this moment, and... He wishes that Obi-Wan had just killed him, and so in this kind of fantasy, Obi-Wan throws what's left of Anakin's body into the lava and emerges Vader, and then Vader kills Obi-Wan, a little revenge, and then young Anakin is there and confronts Vader, and Vader fights himself and wins, and then finally we get Natalie Portman, who's pleading with him to stay with her and to not give in, and.
Annie.
Yep, and he chokes her in his fantasy, and then he comes back to life in the real world, overcoming the cybernetics being shut down, and basically says nothing is impossible with the Force. So it was dramatic. I gotta be honest, despite seeing dumb Anakin, it was dramatic. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. I'm not gonna say I enjoyed it, but I was like, what is happening here? I liked the end too. I like the credit that he's given to this Dr. Aphra character, that she can go into the Emperor's throne room.
Balls on this chick.
Right? Gotta like her.
Very good. Very, very good.
She's fun.
So, so moving on. The patrons get to pick a book. As we mentioned earlier, if you go to patreon.com/ifanboy and pledge any amount, you become one of the loyal patrons. And every week, you can vote for a book you'd like us to discuss on the show. And this week, honestly, we had, I think, the highest number of patrons participating, which was great to see. And we had a lot of books submitted. But ultimately, the number one book that was requested by the patrons was Black Monday Murders by Jonathan Hickman and Tom Coker.
Tom Coker.
Yeah.
Two M's in Tom.
Yes. So this was great that they picked it, because I think we probably would have talked about it anyway. But also not great that they picked it, because we had to read 52 pages of comics, which was a graphic novel thickness.
It was quite robust.
Quite robust. What did you think of it, Josh?
I think I'm not a Hickman fan.
Oh, I loved it.
I know you are. I just, it's, I mean, it's the same, it feels like all the other Hickman books that I read, where I can recognize this is very good, this is intelligent, this is going to take forever, and I don't know that I want to invest that amount of time.
Well, so, to go over the premise of the book,
okay, why don't you do that?
It's hovering in and around the financial markets. Like the stock market and things like that, which I thought was really interesting, because every major crash of the stock market, the U.S. stock market, has occurred in October.
Which is interesting. That's fascinating. Did not know
really
that.
Interesting. And so Hickman's taken that little nugget and built upon it, where there's some sort of
a cult
group that is controlling the financial market, and there are different positions on the board, right? There are different roles. It's always a group of four. And what we get is, we get a flashback to 1929, to the market crash in 1929 that started the Depression. And then we jump to today in 2016, where there's been a murder, where one of the people who's on the board has been murdered. And what does that now mean for both this group as well as the market now? Really dense, several pages of text explaining things and giving you history, but done in a really creative way. And did you read all the text pieces, Josh, or did you skip them?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, you missed that.
I mean, I skimmed them and I got it, but it was just like, because I got the point early on.
No, but there was a really, really interesting text piece that was a proposal for a website. Did you read that one?
No, I don't think. Maybe. It was very late.
Basically, it was it's not hard. You just got to read comics. Basically, what it was is that it was a it was a proposal from, you know, you're reading some sort of email or you're reading some sort of thing from one person to another where somebody is outlining the idea of, I want to build a website that is basically Snopes, that is debunking urban legends and myths and things like that.
I did read that.
Yeah, and it's tied to the urban legend that on the day of the stock market crash in 1929, stockbrokers were jumping off buildings in New York City because they didn't want to deal with the repercussions, and that actually turned out to be a complete urban legend, or so we think, because it was Winston Churchill who happened to be in New York on that day and witnessed that, but turned out it was a window washer who worked at the hotel who fell off the scaffolding, you know, and so it got all twisted. But what Hickman is positing is that this group is controlling these urban legends to set what the public perceives to be true. And the whole proposal says, let's make a website where we catalog all of these urban legends and we debunk them and we get experts and we'll be totally the source of this. And then we will seed the falsehoods that we want to seed and no one will question it because we are trusted so much. And it's just – God, that's nefarious.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think the manipulation of the public, the idea of a conspiracy going on underneath our noses, this character, this detective Dumas, who is investigating the murder, seemed really compelling. I don't know. As a good Hickman book does, it just grabbed me, and I can't wait for the next one. So.
I finished it.
All right. Well, not for you, man.
I don't know. I feel like, oh, we're going to be in here and everything is going to be horrible.
No, I don't think it was all horrible. Like, I didn't get a horrible
vibe. No, everybody in the book is horrible.
I don't know about that.
Like, there's nobody to – it's all just – it's cold.
It is very cold.
There's not – that's the thing about these books I think that never grabs me, is that there's not – there's nothing fun about it at all. Well, and it doesn't have to be. But for me, like, the comics are really – like I don't know. There wasn't anything that grabbed me. I was like, this is totally impressive and it's really well done and I'm sure that this is for somebody, but it's not for me.
The only thing that worried me about it is that the weird group that's controlling everything seems to have some sort of symbolic language, and there was a couple of moments where people talked in that language, and for a moment I was like, oh, don't be a demon. Please don't be some sort of supernatural force.
Well, it looks like a demon skull on the cover.
Yeah, I know. So time will tell as to whether that happens or not. I'll be very disappointed.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Is there a fun Hickman book?
Manhattan Projects.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Everybody in that is a shit.
Well, no, but that's the thing. And I've talked about this for years, is that I love Hickman's work. I think it's great, but he definitely lacks – I don't want to say he lacks heart, but he lacks the emotional heart that like a Jason Aaron has, or you know, like a Vaughn has. You know, like he is cold and clinical and cerebral, and there's not a lot of room for, you know, warm and fuzzies in that world. So
I think you might be right.
All right, well, those are the books that we enjoyed this week, and the one book that you, the patrons, picked that you want us to talk about. So you can go to ifanboy.com and comment on this post, tell people what you thought of the books, and then be sure, if you are a patron next week, to stay tuned, keep an eye on Patreon or keep an eye on our Twitter to vote for a book next week. So,
I will read this first one because I didn't want to do that to you at the beginning.
I appreciate it.
Nate from West Covina, California, not far from where you are.
Oh, really? I have no idea where I am.
I'm not entirely sure where you are, but I think I know where you're in the OC.
I am in the OC, so
don't call it that. I am Krikrubreep from several dimensions over. I recently inhabited the body of one Nathaniel of West Covina, California. Our time streams are unaligned. I've been thinking about this question for only a moment, but in your dimension, I've pondered it since before the stars shone in the night sky. It's not my aesthetic, but I got to give him credit for the effort. My question is this. If comic book art analysis were a college course, what comics books would be part of its required reading? How does one become adept at comic art analysis? I.e. Josh's, that's my statement that an artist, whether he's ready or not ready, or do you have tips in general?
All right. So.
So we've talked about this a lot.
What is the syllabus? Question.
Yeah. Kirby? Eisner?
Eisner, for sure. Well, Eisner, well, I think if you go, it depends on how, if this is analysis, so we don't really have to worry that much about history, so we don't need to go way back to, you know, to the pre-Superman Batman era of comic strips and things like that. But in terms of comic book structure, definitely Eisner and Kirby, yeah, if you're doing that.
Yeah, let's focus on structure, not so much design.
Okay.
Storytelling. Yes. We'll say storytelling is our way to go. So, I mean, Eisner, which is also like, you know what? Design is also part of storytelling too, but not so much character design,
right.
I'll say. After Kirby, I mean, you got to go Ditko?
Yep.
We skipped the 50s. I mean, there's not much in
the 50s, though. I mean, honestly, and the thing is, you can't do too much. I mean, I definitely think you do Eisner and Kirby to represent those early years, and then Kirby, Ditko, Neil Adams in the 60s, right?
Well, Neil Adams is like the next one after them, like say 60s, early 70s in there.
And then you go back to Kirby in the 70s.
Yeah, you hit Kirby. But I would say that if you went with anything in the 50s, it would be like either a Kurtzman.
Yeah, you go the EC route. Yeah, I think you go
an EC route, or maybe like Kaniger, just to show that kind of thing that was happening then, because it's really good work. It was, you know, very photorealistic. And then when they get to the 60s, they sort of turn up the cartooniness a little more. Or if you could even go with like DC kind of stuff from the 50s.
And then you probably, I mean, and then the 70s, you can touch upon, you know, like Carlin or, you know, that crowd, you know, like the
Byrne.
Yeah.
Cochran.
Cochran?
Cochran, Dave. Like, who's the X-Men guy from the era before Byrne?
Cochran.
That's Cochran. Yeah.
He was very brief.
Those are all mainstream things. Yeah. Though. Our area of expertise is mainstream superhero comics.
Right, yeah. But then I say you got to jump to the 80s, and you go to Watchmen, and you go to Dark Knight, you know, Miller. Yeah, all that sort of stuff. And then I think then you jump into the 90s, and you got McFarlane, and you've got, this easily becomes a history lesson, which is what I'm trying to steer it away from.
Sure.
And more as going back to what you said, but back to the question, Josh, how do you know when an artist is ready or not ready? You know?
Well, that's actually a different thing.
Yeah.
I think that there's a level that's really hard to say, because that really is one of those subjective things. But there is a level of craft, meaning the ability to tell that story, to lay out a page in a compelling and clear way.
Yep.
And then a level of polish on their draftsmanship.
Right.
Meaning it looks right.
Right.
Like the arms are the right length, the heads are in the right places and the right size, the if I was using Gabe Hardman's sort of like everything goes from left to right. The important things are in the front, the less important things are in the back, you know. It's all of those things, and it really is, you know it when you see it a little bit. This person, it looks professional.
I think it's a combination of anatomy and figure drawing, right? And you know, the way they represent the characters. It's a combination of their approach to layouts and storytelling. And then it's a kind of synchronicity that happens from the art, along with the word balloons, along with the total package that gets the story across. And, you know, and it's tough, because when you're an artist, to be told that you're not ready yet is like the worst thing you can ever hear. But there are things like we talk about and joke about now, but like whether it's left panel stacking or tangents, or, you know, and tangents is the thing where, you know, an element of the drawing lines up literally with another element because it's just easy to do that, you know, where Spider-Man swinging a web and the web happens to be perpendicular to the building. You know, like there are artists like Eric Larson recently went crazy on Facebook identifying tangents and talking about it. But even Mike Norton and other, you know, I've had conversations with people about this. You know, like the tangent presence in comics. Once you see it, it's like it's kind of like I got this. You can't not see it.
But it's funny because there's been so much.
Yeah.
over time that it's impossible to hit it all. Because
that's the thing. Not only has there been so much over time, but there have been so many variations and so many people doing different things where there are really great artists who have shit anatomy, you know, where there are artists who are cartooning.
Jerry Conway.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's beautiful. And so the thing is, there's exceptions to all those rules. Like, your anatomy has to be believable,
right,
as opposed to realistic, if that makes sense. It has to look like it works,
right,
in your way.
Fluidity. All red is a great example.
Yeah.
So,
you know, he's got a thing going on and where that stuff comes from. So if you look at somebody like David Aja, he's got his own style. Nobody else can do, they try, but nobody else can do that style. But that also came from somewhere, and that somewhere probably wasn't necessarily superhero comics that came before it. It could have been all sorts of things. It could have been, you know, you could easily look at what was the book from a few years ago that we all loved about the architect?
About the architect.
It was the indie book.
Asterios Polyp.
Asterios Polyp.
Dave Mazzucchelli, who did amazing mainstream comic superhero book with Batman Year One with Frank Miller, and then Asterios Polyp, you know, 20, 30 years later rolls on, and that is very simplistic line drawing cartooning that is just fucking amazing. And we all raved and loved it. And then late great Darwin Cook goes, oh yeah, you like that? And then does a sequence in Parker that blows it away. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love the progression of work of the really dialed in artists who are challenged by other artists' work. And you get great results out of it. And we're totally.
But you could do a mini seminar on Mazzucchelli. Yeah. You could do one on Eminem. I mean, that guy, you know, this is how you tell a story. That's how you do it. There's so many guys. Darwin.
Exactly.
Romita Jr. Like, that'd be a neat sort of, like, look how that goes.
Yeah.
It's fun to talk about. That'd be a great class.
Yeah, it would be. It would be a lot of fun. And probably somebody with more focus or knowledge could teach it than us.
Oh. Yeah, an artist.
Yeah, exactly.
Perhaps a professional comic book editor. We're gonna wrap it up. If you want to write in, it's contact@ifanboy.com. Let us know who you are, where you're from, and of course, in what capacity and length you have been thinking about this question. The consistency on that is just, we applaud. You've all got this.
Yeah, you totally, you got this. So, excellent.
Any other podcast?
So the last big superhero movie of the summer came out last week, and me and Mike Romo braved the theaters and saw Suicide Squad and talked about it on the podcast. I promise you there is much yelling than during the Batman v Superman podcast, but we'll tease it with this. Mike Romo was insulted, so think about that. But so you can go to ifanboy.com, that's up on the post and it's in the feed. You can go back and download it and check that out and share in the discourse about Suicide Squad. But we've got more podcasts, don't we?
Yes, we do. This week coming up, unless something horrible happens, you will have a conversation with myself and the creative and domestic team of Gabriel Hardman and Karina Becco, who are doing Invisible Republic.
That is our first official new Talksplode, right?
Yes, it is. Yes,
awesome.
It is. That Talksplode. So we talked for over an hour. That'll be coming out. Lots of stuff. Not as much on craft as you would think, but you are going to hear some of Gabe's opinions.
Which is what I hope for. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Also, if you like hearing us talk, go over to goodfellasminute.com and you can hear us talk about Goodfellas split up minute by minute. Each episode is 1 minute, 146 of those, and it will be there.
If you like the format of Goodfellas Minute, go to moviesbyminute.com, and there you can find Star Wars Minute, Goodfellas Minute, as well as all the other podcasts that talk in the minute format. It's moviesbyminutes.com. So, and I recorded on the Back to the Future Minute. I don't know when it's coming out, but I did a minute for that. That was a lot of fun, and I was also recently on Star Wars Minute Weekend Edition, which was a blast. Where I talked a lot about Star Wars and Disney at the various Disney World, Disneyland parks. So
you would have to be a Star Wars Minute patron.
Yes, you would.
To access that program.
You should. So
and you should be that. So there you go. Ron, where's all
it's
this?
All everything, all the great shows are at ifanboy.com. Go to ifanboy.com where you can find the post for the show and leave a comment. Tell us what you thought of the books or of anything or any topic we want to hear. The discourse is great. And you can find links to all the other previous podcasts that came out there. If you're on the social media, you can follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy and on Twitter at ifanboy. And you can follow us individually. I am at RonXO. Josh is at J.A. Flanagan. And Connor is supposedly at C.S. Kilpatrick. Patrick, and if you hear from Connor, please tell him to call us.
Do we know?
Nope, nothing.
We don't. Yep. All right. Fair enough. That must
My
be nice for him.
My only thought is that the mission did not go well, and there's nothing we can do about it. Nothing we can do. He's gone.
If you like this show, you can obviously go and write us a review in iTunes, because that always helps. The more we get, we still bother the Around Comics guys about it.
Which is great.
Most of you people listening don't even know what we're talking about. But at one time, there was a reviews arms race. Then they quit. But we were always ahead, so it didn't really matter. But it's still there. That is super helpful, and thank you to everybody who does that. Or better yet, just keep it out there. Keep sending the links to the shows, or when people ask about what shows they should listen to, we always see when you say, oh, we like iFanboy, or I've listened to iFanboy for forever. Keep that up. We really appreciate it, and that is our best marketing and advertising by far.
Yeah. So.
So do that more, and that'll do
it. So until next week, when hopefully it will cool down because it's really hot.
It's so hot.
I'm Ron.
I'm hot.
I'm hot.
That's what I am. It's very humid.
Hot.
Bye.